That music sounds like something that should be, Harvey Leonard should be standing in front of it, a Storm Team 5 or something or other. Anyway, it is a Monday night, and so that means it's North Shore Sports Night. And hello, I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, engineering remotely, I might add, from the other environs. Bill Newell, of course, working diligently right now as we speak, getting scores and putting together the Salem News Sportscast podcast for tomorrow. And we'll talk a little bit about that in just a second. And tonight we'll be focusing on Linfield High School hockey, as they are one of two remaining, actually one of three remaining unbeaten teams in the state. Two girls teams, Winthrop and Duxbury, are still unbeaten. And Linfield is the only unbeaten on the boys' side. And they've got a hell of a schedule coming up as well. And, of course, at the bottom of the hour, it'll be our basketball insider expert, Mike Grenier, who will talk primarily Celtics, but other stuff as well. And so we welcome in Tim Kearns. How are you, Coach?
I'm good, Rick. Yourself?
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, we were just talking before we went on the air here. I actually enjoyed the sub-zero weather. I love it. I love winter. And my only regret is that it's we only get 2 days of winter now. So, you know, people say I'm crazy, but I love winter.
Well, Rick, if they could see you on a fall evening in a broadcast booth with seven layers of clothing, plus in your goodie bag, you're carrying a portable heater.
Yep.
You know, that they would be, and you like the cold.
Yep, and you forgot the...
Go out and walk around in a minus 39 degree wind chill.
And you forgot...
Running in a minus 39 degree wind chill.
You forgot the chemical hand warmers too, Tim.
Yeah, and the hand warmers. You know, like, how can you not be able to take the cold of a September, October evening, and yet in early February, you go running around like one of the Elm Street Brownies?
Well, except I wear a spacesuit, so I think that's the difference. There's nothing, no part of my body is exposed to the weather when I go out in those conditions. And I can't even tell you how many layers I. You think I wear a lot of layers in the fall? goodness. But I will say this: we have plenty of wood. We have plenty of firewood. We had the fire going on Friday and Saturday, carefully, I might add. And you know, it didn't last long. And now we're back to the. And of course, the big challenge is, as you pointed out, Tim. It's the tremendous difference in temperature. It's the tremendous range. The contrast is so ridiculous that it's bothersome.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah. Well, you know, I was messaging with my brother who was in Gilbert, Arizona, and he's talking about being outside, shorts and short sleeve shirts. So yesterday when it was really, really cold, I went outside in the early morning, outside on the deck with shorts and a t-shirt with my cup of coffee, had me take a picture, and I sent it to my brother. celebrating negative 34 degrees.
Yeah, that was something. It was really something. I want to do one quick thing here, Coach, while I think of it. I want to go to our North Shore Today news post this morning and refer people to the Gloucester Times. There was a horrendous fire in Essex on Friday night of all nights, Friday night going into Saturday morning. And that's when the wind chill, as you mentioned, was down around minus 40. And the family was completely displaced. The animals and the family are all safe. The house was completely destroyed. So if you go to the website, North Shore Today post, just click on right under the newscast, click on contributions to help Essex family whose home was completely destroyed in a fire Friday night, can be made at GoFundMe.com. And the GoFundMe link goes directly to the fundraising efforts that have been put in by family and neighbors to help these people. So if you're of a mind to help out, please do. Just an awful, awful thing to experience, of course. And we know, Tim, you and I both know that the people on Cape Ann probably, I guess probably everywhere, but people on Cape Ann certainly, when something happens, they tend to reach out and help.
Yeah, they certainly do. You know, we've had a couple of instances of that at Gloucester High School with the young family whose new baby is requiring a lot of care at Boston Children's, and they're still waiting to be able to bring him home. it's been awful tough on them. And the outpouring of help from the students and the faculty has just been tremendous in support of this family.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing that people do that. Tim, what's on your sports mind? What's up in the attic up there?
Oh, it's interesting to watch the Celtics just absolutely destroy the Brooklyn Nets the other night. I mean, they couldn't miss. I mean, they just run down the court and throw something up and it would go in. It was actually fun to watch, especially since it was Kyrie and the Nets. And then they turn around and they throw up a stinker a couple of days later. But I think that's to be expected. You're on such a high when the game comes that easy to you and suddenly, you know, you've got to turn it on, go back out there and do it again. And the shots just weren't there and, the legs are a little heavy and the other team's up for kicking your ass. And, they did. I'm trying to think of who they played the other night, but they,
Phoenix.
Phoenix just, you know, Phoenix took him to the woodshed. It's a loss, but, you know, you come back and you win the next one.
Yeah.
But it's interesting just how, totally different the two games were by the Celtics. One so seemingly effortless, and the other was just like, you know, trying to trudge through mud.
What do you make, Tim, switching subjects of the coaching additions with the Patriots? Everything I'm reading, learning about, hearing, there's some interesting vibes coming out of Foxborough, and it's certainly it's not coming from confidence, but it seems to be coming from determination.
Yeah, you know, there's a an attitude that, you know, Belichick's not happy, obviously, where they've been the last couple of years. You win 10 and then you go back and you win 8. And, the two coaches you thought might be able to do the job absolutely couldn't do the job. Could not do the job. Especially Matt Patricia, who was a fish out of water. He couldn't call an offensive play to save his life. And unfortunately, he nearly cost the life of his young quarterback. it caused a lot of visible dissension. And we saw Mac Jones absolutely tearing into him, you know, from the sidelines and on the field and just disgusted with the play calling. I think there were times he just wanted to call the plays by himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's go that way. But, you know, he's gone. And, Bill O'Brien, who everybody wanted to bring back, is back. He'll have control of the offense. He's going to be the quarterback coach. So you know that, and Mac Jones has a history with us from Alabama. So there's going to be a comfort level there. They're bringing back Adrian Clem, mm-hmm. the offensive line coach.
I love that move. I love it.
20 years ago, and maybe he was a very good player for them. So, you know, they're making moves to strengthen the coaching staff. Though losing their tight end coach is going to be a big hit. I saw yesterday in one of the projected mock drafts that there's one projected the Pats to take the Notre Dame tight end. And we know that the Notre Dame tight ends of late have been very, very good and productive as soon as they get into the league. So we'll have to wait and see how that works out for them. So we'll see. You know, we'll see how it goes. How fast Clem can acclimate to the Patriots. I don't think he's going to have a big learning curve. He's played here. He didn't play in a Belichick, I believe.
He
was one of Belichick's boys. One of Parcells' boys.
Okay, finally, Philadelphia or Kansas City?
Oh, God. I'm not a fan of either of them. So I'm going to have to go with the Philly, just because one of my colleagues at the high school in my department It's from Philly.
Peacock. Peacock, yeah.
You know, I mean, he lives and dies, everything that's Philly related. So for him, I'm gonna pick Philly.
Well, Philadelphia is
they're a little bit healthier than Kansas City.
It's my second favorite city. So I'm going to pull for the Eagles, but I kind of think that Kansas City, I mean, Mahomes is just otherworldly. He is just something.
Yeah, he is, you know, but Philadelphia isn't lacking with in a skillful quarterback either.
Yeah, that's right.
So
all right.
It's going to be interesting to see how these two quarterbacks are going to make their impact on the game.
Absolutely.
Everybody's made a lot of certain people have been making a big thing about the first time that two black quarterbacks will start the Super Bowl. I just like to look at it as two really young, talented, athletic, skillful quarterbacks are going to be going at it really like for the first time.
Absolutely.
The first few years of their careers, who possess a lot of the same skills. They both can run. They both can throw the ball. They adapt very well to the changing conditions in front of them. They're very creative, and it's going to be interesting to see just how these guys help their team motor down the field.
All right, Coach, we got to take a break here and come back with Linfield High School hockey coach John Gardner. This is North Shore Tonight. No, it's not. It's North Shore Sports Night as opposed to North Shore Today. I'm Rick Moore with Tim Kearns, and we will be back.
Hi, everyone. I'm Bill Newell with sports. The Bruins and Celtics were both off last night. The Celtics host the Suns tonight. The Bruins are on a 10-day break in their schedule. In local sports, after last night's action, there are now still two unbeaten basketball teams in Lynn. The Lynn English boys defeated Everett 74-56 to move to 16-0 on the season. The Lynn Classical girls topped Malden 53-41. The Beverly High School wrestling team captured the Northeastern Conference title this week with their win over Salem. Now ahead tonight in boys basketball, Saugus is at Salem, Swampscott at Beverly. Danvers travels to Marblehead, Gloucester heads to Peabody. Girls basketball, a game to watch tonight, finds Winthrop at Masconomet. Tomorrow.
Well, that wasn't what it was supposed to be, but you got last night's scores anyway, so whatever. All right, we welcome in now John Gardner, who is the coach at Linfield High School boys hockey, and you just heard Bill Newell mention there are just a couple of teams left with unbeaten records. There are three, I believe, in the state. Two are girls teams, and John, your team is up there in the boys team. So once again, we say congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. It's not a goal you set for the season, but once it kind of gets set in motion, it's kind of pretty cool to kind of shift gears and kind of shine light on it. So we're pleased that we were the last boys team standing.
Yeah, I got to ask Coach Kearns. Tim coached Gloucester High School baseball. Tim, did you ever have a season that was kind of extended where you went so long without losing?
No.
Okay, that's the quick answer, huh?
Coach, I have to ask you. I saw a picture of you in the paper, I believe. You sporting the beard this winter?
I always have some some semblance of facial hair to differentiate myself from my twin brother Jay,
okay,
but it's a little longer this year.
Okay, so the question is the beard staying untrimmed while this unbeaten streak is going on?
Not really. Like last year at the end of the year, we were on a 11 game unbeaten streak in the middle of the year last year, and you know it's not that I won't touch it, but I kind of don't. Trim it as much. So yeah, it kind of is and it isn't because
and
of the streak.
And there's one thing to say about it.
Yeah. What's that?
And does the wife have anything to say about it?
Actually, if I actually shaved my face completely, she would tell me to move out for 2 weeks.
Oh,
she hates me.
Okay, Coach, I want to ask you about. Obviously, I want to get to the most recent game against North Reading and some upcoming games. Talk about the team, but Last week or the week before, you mentioned we don't get into that superstition thing. And you know, as an educator, a logician, a mathematician, an astronomer, a civilian, what do you call it? Amateur astronomer. I try not to too, but as a sports person, I do have these superstitions. And what about them? Do you kind of said no, we're not doing that. And do you find that kids have these little quirks, or do you guys, you coaches, have any little quirks?
So yeah, we've always aspired to. I mean, we always kind of played into the jinxes and the superstition, and you kind of the whole Acme safe gonna hit you around the next corner. But for some reason, me and my brother last year just decided for the season that we were going to kind of really go opposite and just like there is absolutely no streaks. There's no, I mean, there are little things that you do inadvertently. You know, old habits die hard, but like, yeah, you're wearing certain things or to the games and a little pregame routine. But mm-hmm. as far as like saying the shutout word or my brother's a goalie, so that would be blasphemy in the past. But We don't play to it mm-hmm. this year. And the issue I told you we're having with this, that is we just got our new uniforms and they're beautiful from the school and they're like top of the line NHL quality. And we kind of shifted to, what the school is doing. We were the only, team in the school that was going with the old logo and just the navy blue and white. And now we have these brand new gorgeous uniforms and none of my guys want to wear them. Ultimately it's their decision.
Okay.
I'm not a dictator, but I kind of want to like lean in on them and be like, hey, if you guys are going to lose this week because you put on new threads, then shame on you.
Okay. Tim?
I always was superstitious. I'm old school. I was superstitious. Depending on what good was happening, you know, there's always little things that you do. You put your glove down in a certain spot. You wouldn't let anybody else use it. You know, I mean, there was always something that you could do that would hopefully bring you a little bit of luck. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I'm still finding myself do, you know, some old things that, oh, yeah, that have been working. but, again, we're not really getting immersed in it or oh no, taboo, we did this, so we made it a conscious decision last year and it's carried over this year.
Geez, I used to pray when I got up to bat, but it didn't work. anyway, Coach, tell me about the North Reading game, because last week we talked about, you know, they don't have a great record, but they're always a threat. Give me a little pre-see on that one, if you would, please.
Yeah, so last time we played them, we gave them a goal for a shift, and then we tied it, and then they gave them another goal. So we kind of, you know, talked about not giving them any life, and to jump on them early. And then when you jump on teams, we've been having trouble extending. So we said jump on them early, strike first, defend, and then extend, or vice versa. And we did that. We scored three quick ones. They scored one late that I wasn't happy with towards the end of the period. It's kind of like giving CPI to your opponent, mm-hmm. your opponent in the room. So we kind of talked about that in between break. And then we scored three more in the third. And our third line is just, again, I'll use the color, our gold line, has been going good, scoring a lot of goals the past three games. So they've been back at it. So pretty much the game is out of reach at that point once it was 6-1.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they scored a couple just kind of meaningless goals towards the end. Mm-hmm. But yeah, nothing. We were in the driver's seat the whole way.
Okay. Tim?
Coach, as you go through the season and the unbeaten streak and you scored a bunch of goals looking at the outcomes of your game so far, are there new guys stepping up with the kind of momentum your team has? Are some of the younger guys on the team all of a sudden finding a second gear and really contributing maybe a bit more than you thought they might?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of had a couple sophomores that we kind of knew they were going to, you know, they were going to take off this year. And they did a couple weeks ago. The Will Norton, sophomore left winger, he's past double digits now in goals. So he's going good. I mentioned that third line. We've been kind of having a revolving door of wingers with our third line center, Jack Meenan. And we kind of just said, with injuries and sickness, so finally I said, listen, we're going to roll with the same line for a couple games straight and see if we can get some chemistry. And boy, have they ever, some guys scoring that we always knew had that polish. It's just getting the opportunity and then eventually, executing when they need to. We joked at the beginning of the year with losing that top line about guys that have the potential to be 10 goal scorers. And we always say, like, you're not a 10 goal scorer until you've scored your 10th goal. So, like, having opportunities and hitting posts and having a little bad quote unquote puck luck, which again, we don't believe in. you gotta bury when you get your chances. And some guys, we got multiple guys with double digit goals now and, you know, scores up and down the lineup, which is nice.
Yeah, it's great when you see 12, 14 kids who have at least 1 point. That speaks to a couple of things, but in particular that you use the whole bench, you're able to do that. And some of your games have not been runaways, so the kids have been in, I would assume, pretty difficult situations at times.
Yeah, we always talk about with the depth that we have in our program and practicing hard against each other, like whereas a team that has, you know, one top heavy line and then their roster falls off and they're practicing against some kids that aren't even going to get on the ice. Our guys that are, I've mentioned, fourth, fifth line in the program can get out there and are beyond serviceable and kind of, you know, cause problems. So we just preface guys that aren't getting minutes to play hard in practice so they don't do a disservice to their teammates and, some of their games get elevated. So they're used to playing against our top group. We have last year we had a top heavy line. This year we got a top heavy six, and our bottom three lines, four lines after that in the program are really solid. So, just create that competitive stuff during practice and it carries over in the games.
Before I give it back to Tim, I want to ask you, I think I saw that you, did you use two goalies the other night?
Yeah, so we've been hoping to get our freshman in, Michael Marenga. He's come a long way in a short amount of time. That's generally what happens when guys get, you know, a freshman comes in and they get, you know, Jay gets his hands on him. So he's been all over Michael. Michael's been playing really solid for our JV team. Our JV team's 15-2-2. So they're rolling. So he gets game minutes there and then gets to go against our guys shooting during practice. So we got him in, a little bit more than halfway through the third he got in. Unfortunately, our guys, you know, he goes in and I immediately get on the bench like, hey, let's make his life easy, blocking shots, like light lifting. First shot he had was against North Reading's best player. He's got like 15 goals in the year, breakaway. So, unfortunately for Michael, that's how he started his high school career. But, he's got a good attitude. He's going to be a good goalie for us, definitely.
Well, I want to thank you, Rick, for taking my question because I was going to go with the goalie topic. And you managed to steal my thunder. So, Coach, you're looking at, you know, is your present goalie, your starting goalie, a senior?
Yeah, Danny's a senior. Rick and I have talked about he's a program goalie as far as he was JV for 3 years, and I like to tell people up on the front, we've been blessed with good goalies and a lot of them, so that's not an indictment on Danny. As far as, you know, waiting till senior year to be with us, but boy, has he ever taken advantage of his opportunity. He's run with it. He's still hasn't lost and made some big saves when we need him. Just getting better again, you know, with Jay helping him out. He's getting better every week, so we're hoping that continues.
You know, I see in the schedule, John, that you've loaded up pretty heavy the last several games with what I think six to go. Getting ready for the tournament. You're going to be in a tournament down at Martha's Vineyard. I guess we can talk about that in a couple of days or a week or so. But, you know, as we look at Wednesday's game, Pentucket, not the greatest record in the world, but again, another threat in the Cape Ann League.
Yeah, I've had this one kind of circled. When we got through the Cape Ann League, the Newburyport Triton week, we kind of mentioned that we had a bunch of trap games of our guys just looked at scoreboard, or, you know, don't put stock in score. You can look at scores, but don't put stock in it. So we knew that we had a bunch of trap games coming up. Went through two of them, and by this one against Pawtucket, has kind of sat with me for a while. They're much better from last year. They have improved throughout this year. I look at some of their second rounds against certain opponents. I mean, they lost to Amesbury in the beginning of the year and then just beat them. They were in a close game with Triton. Even the 4-0 game to Newburyport sticks out because Newburyport was very motivated. We had just beaten them 2-0 on Wednesday, and then that's a 4-0 game. It sounds pretty lopsided, but you know, if you kind of follow the game, it was close for a long stretch, and they have a good first line, and you know, they're going to give us all we can handle at their rink.
Mm-hmm.
Coach, what do you know about Hopkinton that you decided to take a trip down there?
Oh, so that's a part of the Vineyard. So it's funny that you asked. The Vineyard trip, we've been going on and off for over 20 years, and the tradition is that the host team Vineyard always hosts Linfield, and their coach wanted to get away from that matchup and maybe set up that in the finals. He's having a great season this year. So he just kind of, it's his tournament. I told him, you can do whatever you want. So he matched us up with Hopkinton. They had gone multiple years and won it multiple years when they were going good, a couple years ago, and they are again this year. So, you know, it's just a different mixing up the matchups, kind of like I'm watching the Beanpot right now. They mix it up. They mixed it up this year. So that's how we got them.
I forgot about the Beanpot. Oh, that's bad. Oh man, I'm not as good a hockey fan as I thought I was. Oh my God.
Rick, the only reason why I remembered is because I was driving back, and I drive on the Levitt Circle, and you can see they put the scoreboard up.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm guilty too.
All right, great time of year, Coach, and you got to give me some final thoughts on where your team is right now. I mean, you've mentioned just about every kid on the roster, which is fantastic. Over the last few weeks, and the stretch run is coming up. I don't know, what are you looking at this week, just going into practice and everything?
Yeah, so we kind of give them a countdown once we get into February, and we're down to like 8 practices, 6 games, and pushing 2 weeks. A lot's going to happen, and that's just for the regular season. But it's just a constant, constantly saying you're going to get better as a player, get better as a team, and you know, with at this point in the year, we kind of know what our strengths and weaknesses are. So it's, you know, making those strengths even sharper, and the stuff that you struggle with, you got to fix. You don't want any Achilles heels, and we have a couple that you know rear their ugly head here and there. So we got to make sure we fix those. And again, it's just kind of managing minutes a little bit too, because. Again, we go Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday. That's what we end with. And that trip to the Vineyard, it's a bit of a grueling trip. So by design, it's a good team building, you know, get on a bus, drive 2 hours, get on a ferry, you know, and do that. So, it's just kind of, again, tweaking, fine tuning, and every single practice, every single game is a chance to address issues that we have to get ready for March.
Tim, final thoughts for Coach Gardner?
Coach, whatever you do, don't trim the beard.
No problem. I can accommodate you with that request.
Little superstition there. Coach, we will talk again soon. Good luck this week, and thank you for joining us once again.
Thanks, guys. Love it.
Thanks, John. Take care. All right, that's John Gardner, the Linfield High School hockey coach. His brother Jay, of course, assistant coach. He's the goaltending coach. And, Tim, I think that's pretty much why John keeps the beard. He wants to separate. They look like twins. Oh, and by the way, Tim, John is the older brother. Jay's the baby brother. John is 1 minute older than Jay.
Well, you don't talk about age. I would always talk to my neighbor. She was with her young son in the driveway. He was riding his bike. And he told me how old he was. And he asked me how old I was. And I told him. And his mother turned around and goes, "You're that old? I can't believe it. I thought you were in your 50s.
Okay, well, you got a friend. That's good.
Oh, yeah. I went right back across the street and took my anti-aging pill.
There you go. That's always sweet, isn't it? I don't have that problem of anybody telling me that. I've always looked old, so, you know, that's no big deal. All right, Coach, we'll take a break, see if we can get Mike Grenier back with us now. And I just want to make sure my levels, it looks like they're a little high for my microphone, so I want to just drop mine down a little bit here. That's better. Okay, We will take yet another break, see if I can press the correct key this time. And we'll be back with Mike Grenier, our basketball insider.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Writer at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
Okay, welcome back to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell working on the Salem News Sports Podcast that will be dropping around 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. We welcome in now our very special basketball insider, Mike Grenier. And Mike, I'm going to let Tim lead off with this because he had some pretty good points to make here at the beginning. So, Tim,
sure,
you start.
All right. Well, let's go right back to what I asked you when just before we came on. How about the Jekyll Hyde performance of the Celts? They take the Brooklyn Nets to the woodshed, and I mean, you know, 71 points in the first half.
Exactly. Yeah.
Overall, I mean, it was just a crushing defeat, and it's like everything they threw up went in. It was absolutely. I mean, it was. I was actually smiling and almost laughing. They made it look so easy in that first half.
Yep.
And then they come back against Phoenix and just really lay the proverbial egg.
Maybe though beating the Nets and leading in that game by 50 points might have driven Kyrie Irving away. You know? By the way, Tim, before I address that issue, as an aside, is there any breaking news right now? Did the Celtics trade 26-year-old Jaylen Brown for 34-year-old Kevin Durant?
Oh, there we go.
Right?
Please, I had talked this afternoon on one of the afternoon knucklehead shows, and I'm like, you can't. You just can't possibly be serious about that story. You know? And why would you... You know, why would you want that? Because you got Tatum, who expects to have the ball in his hands every time down the court,
right,
and be the main man. You bring Durant in here, and you got the exact same guy,
right,
which is only going to cause you problems.
Yeah, and not only that, like I mentioned, the eight-year difference and the fact that, you know, Kevin Durant, with all due respect, he's won a couple of championships, he's been an MVP, he's been a Finals MVP, but he has a lot of wear and tear on his body. He's 34 years old. He's on the back nine of his career. And there would be no guarantee, guys, that he would even make it through the playoffs this year because he has been injury prone, and that's from all the wear and tear. So it's totally nonsense, total nonsense. And, you know, obviously Jaylen Brown's career is still ascending. He made the All-Star team this year. And Kevin Durant, he may still have another year or two in him. However, he wouldn't necessarily put the Celtics over the top. So it's just a real silly topic, I believe, and I don't think Brad Stevens, who's the guy in charge here, I'd be like, I don't know. I think I would drive my car into the ocean to pull that one.
Listening to the two nitwits on the radio station in Boston, I want to identify which two. Oh, they would do that trade in a heartbeat. Out of your mind?
Yeah.
You know, one thing Tatum has to learn is that a team can need really three stars.
Right.
To really be able to go and get the championship.
Right.
And I immediately thought back to boy, wouldn't Kevin McHale have loved to have been the number one man on another team?
Right.
Or on a team. But he understood Larry was the alpha. And he was, and if he kept his eyes open and his hands up, Larry would give him the ball at every opportunity. And Kevin put up great numbers throughout his career because he recognized who the alpha was. The ball was going to go through Larry. It's like the ball is going to go through Tatum, run the floor, keep your hands up, keep your head on the swivel, and be ready to go to the hoop.
Yep.
You know? And okay, you can't be alpha. Well, be alpha too.
Yeah, we're in total agreement there, and I don't think, you know, Brad Stevens was the man in charge. The bottom line is I don't think he would make that trade. And, you know, and these, obviously, these crazy trade ideas and rumors, I don't know where they emanate from, the internet or people on talk shows or whatever, but they never, the source never seems to be a general manager of a team. So, like, we can look ahead 2 years down the road and Jason Tatum will be traded to the Lakers for LeBron James. You know, I mean, something else next year will be the equivalent of this particular discussion, you know. So I don't think it will materialize. Thursday is a trade deadline. I think you're going to do the Celtics, unless they pick up someone who's not in a trade, but, you know, a buyout deal, a player from, like, a Charlotte Hornets or the Orlando Magic, where the Celtics wouldn't have to part with anybody, or a draft pick or something like that. They might add a body, and it would be nice for them to add a body, perhaps a swing man or someone to back up Al Horford and Robert Williams, since Robert Williams has been injury prone. But those are the only possible deals that I see down the next few days here, you know?
And Mike,
to get back to your point about the Jekyll and Hyde nature, yes, and they are 2-4 without Marcus Smart. So it shows you the value he has as a starter. And, of course, it's sort of like a domino effect. You know, Malcolm Brogdon is having a tremendous season, 14.4 points a game, and he's shooting. He's their best three-point shooter right now, percentage-wise, and he's a tremendous guard. However, when he's in the starting lineup, then you don't have anyone that's really good backing him up. So, therefore, with Marcus Smart out, you know, Brogdon becomes a quality starter, but then you're weakening your bench at the same time.
Yeah, and I was reading that, you know, Sam Hauser has not done lately what they wanted him to do and stuff like that. And, you know, Peyton Pritchard has been hot and cold. Did you get a chance to read the article by Shaughnessy? He talked to ML Carr, Dave Collins, and Bob Cousy.
Yeah. I know they were doing that story. I didn't have a chance to read it.
Well, the one thing that stood out with me, they all said what You two as assistant coaches at the Celtics have mentioned all season long. They all brought that up. And last year too. I gotta give you credit. But one of the things that just, it leaped off the page for me, and it might have been Cousy who said it, but he said, they're prone, you know, I think he was talking about the two J's. They're prone to settle into the dribble, a little too often. And it's sort of like a relapse where they want to isolate And, you know, we've talked about it. It seems to me like even against Phoenix, Tim was mentioning that it's kind of self-inflicted. Phoenix was not a superior team. They certainly had a motive. But the Celtics just fell into a bad habit. And I wonder, how do I ask the question? Can you compare or contrast that with the great Celtic teams? Did the teams go into a slump or other teams come in and just, you know, just be better than, and of course, on some nights the other team is just better than you are.
Correct, and sometimes even in Larry Bird era, I can actually remember one game against a bad Atlanta team where they came into the Garden, and I want to say Doc Rivers was on that team, that Atlanta team, and they just buried the Celtics. And I remember being in the Atlanta locker room, and they were sort of like making fun of Larry Bird flailing away and trying to steal the ball when the Celtics were down 20. They were having a little fun at Larry Bird's expense in the locker room. But, you know, no matter how great a team is, you know, whether it be the Golden State Warriors when they were at their peak or you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers when they had LeBron and Kyrie, and they win, every team goes through an 82-game season with a mini slump or getting buried by a bad team. Look at the Celtics. They lost three times to the Orlando Magic. And on paper, you say, how does that happen? Because the Celtics are so far superior in terms of talent. But, you know, maybe teams like the Celtics and other good teams, they sleepwalk their way through a particular game or two, and then, you know, they find themselves down, you know, 16 at halftime, and then they lose by 18.
So it happens to every team. The idea, of course, is to right the ship and to be good in the long run. And so far, the Celtics have been able to do that through their mini slumps. And, you know, you do get concerned because obviously they are missing Marcus Smart. There's no question about it. In my mind, he brings that defensive intensity. Sometimes I think where the Celtics lose focus, Tim and Rick, is on the defensive side of the ball because the Celtics are a very talented offensive team, and I think they feel sometimes, yeah, you know, we'll score 116, we'll outdo them by the end of the fourth quarter. Well, it doesn't happen that way all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last three games, right, Rick, I think they've been held under 100 points.
Yep.
So they're hurting, and of course, you know, Jason Tatum the other night had a 3-for-15 night. So, you know, those things are going to happen, but in over the course of a long season, and as long as it doesn't become a 6 or a 7 or an 8 game losing streak, you know. So, I have to say this though too. It's funny. I referred to Kyrie Irving, and I know he's been traded obviously to Dallas, and I thought of all the teams that Kyrie Irving would go to, that's possibly the worst marriage in the NBA world because Luka Doncic, who's obviously a great talent, he's the most ball-dominant player in the NBA, meaning he controls the ball for 18, 19, 20, 21 seconds, then he makes a decision to shoot or pass. How is Kyrie Irving going to get his shots if Luka Doncic is dominating the ball for 20, 21, 22 seconds? I don't know how amicable that relationship's going to be, but I just think it's a horrible look for that. Maybe I'm wrong, but I really don't think Dallas is any kind of threat by adding Kyrie because Doncic is definitely the guy, and he handles the ball 95% of the time. And even if he gives up some of his shots to Kyrie, which he will, obviously, it's going to come down to Kyrie and Doncic averaging 55, 56 shots per game and the rest of the team averaging 14 shots per game. You're not going to win that way, especially against the good teams in the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm.
That's my take on it. Tim, what do you think?
I'm in complete agreement. You know, my first thought was, you know, the big guy in Dallas, you know, is Kyrie ever going to give him the ball?
Right.
Because we know Kyrie wants the ball out top. He wants to go in. He wants to shoot it up. And Doncic's a guy that expects to see the ball, expects to get the ball, he expects to, you know, to take his share of the shot. And once again, you're going to see Kyrie being Kyrie, and the level of dissension that's going to suddenly settle on top of Dallas is going to be palpable within probably the first 2 weeks.
Right, I agree. And guys, we have from the Celtics' perspective, it helps immensely because the Nets have weakened themselves. And they are not going to be any kind of threat in the playoffs. Even, you know, with Durant coming back, obviously, from his injury, he'll be fine, hopefully. But you're not going to win. Ben Simmons, again, is in his own world. He hasn't played the last couple of weeks. And he's not really a good offensive player. So they've automatically removed themselves as a threat to the Celtics or the Philadelphia 76ers or whoever else they might face in a tough Eastern Conference. So, you know, Kyrie going out west really helps the Celtics, you know. So, and it weakens the Nets, the Brooklyn Nets, immensely, in my opinion. So that's one supposedly good team. They have a, you know, good record at this point, not a great record, but the Nets aren't going to be a threat now.
All right, I know who the top two teams are in your Power Five that we're going to get to later. I just don't know what order they're in, so we'll get to that soon.
Sure.
But I want to ask you guys about venues because, Mike, you've been everywhere. Tim, you've been to a few places. I've only been to a couple. And my favorite, without question, we love Gillette because we get the broadcast from there. And
sure.
They're so nice to us down there during the high school Super Bowl games. But my favorite place far and away is the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia, and that's because of the wonderfulness of Barry Hanrahan, former student of mine. He's assistant general manager and one of the vice presidents of the Flyers, and he always puts us up nicely. And even when we wear our Bruins gear, we're treated okay down there. But the complex there with the baseball field, the football field, and the Wells Fargo Center right there in one venue, it's so easy to get to, and it is just majestic. So that's my favorite place. What do you have, Mike?
Well, it's funny. I'll mention two places, and Tim, I think we'll probably be nodding his head of approval when I mention one of them. I'll start with the basketball side of things. And I think in the text, Rick, I mentioned to you the contrast that I used to see during those Larry Bird era between the old Boston Garden, because we've got to remember the Fleet Center didn't come into being until, like, what, 1994, 1996. The old Boston Garden, in contrast with the L.A. Forum, which had just opened in the late 70s and early 80s. So obviously when Magic Johnson came aboard, there was like such a cultural divide when Gary Larrabee and I covered the playoffs between the Celtics and the Lakers, because in Boston, you were dealing with no air conditioning, the old Boston Garden, you had gum under every seat, you had broken chairs, you had the Lakers complaining about not being able to breathe, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar with the mask on getting oxygen and all that.
And rats in the rafters, don't forget that.
I'm sorry?
Rats in the rafters.
Rats just about everywhere.
Everywhere.
And then we go out to L.A. like 2 days later, and you'd leave the cold weather, and it would be like 75, 80 degrees, and you enter this beautiful modern building with air conditioning, and then you had all the pregame hullabaloo, and you had like Dancing Barry or Dancing Harry. I remember him well. He used to come prancing down the aisles during the timeouts, and he was a precursor to all the entertainment that happens in NBA games these days. And everybody just adored this guy, and he would come dancing down the aisles and dancing. And then, of course, you had your actors and actresses front row at the Lakers game, and it was almost more about the celebrities and the entertainment than it was about the game in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you were from Boston, you just kind of shook your head and you said, wow, this is a completely different world than the Boston Garden. And you know, the Garden was old and rickety and all that, but it had a real home court advantage feel to it. In L.A., it was just about, the dancing girls, the L.A. girls, and it's showtime. Remember, they called the basketball showtime. Mm-hmm. It wasn't called winning time. It was called showtime. I thought of the Celtics more as winning time when those games got down to the nitty-gritty. So you had some fantastic series between those two teams, a lot of respect between people like Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Michael Cooper, James Worthy, ML Carr, Danny Ainge, all those. There was a tremendous mutual respect, Kevin McHale, all that stuff. However, the cultural difference was staggering when you went as a fan. And it was just, you could just feel it every time you walked into either building. And, Gary Larrabee and myself were lucky enough to cover games on the East Coast and the West Coast during those great series. And it was just wild, the difference between the two venues. Just absolutely wild. Of course, people dressed up for the gig in Los Angeles. They would wear all kinds of crazy get-ups and try to get themselves on TV. At the Garden, people would wear shorts and a T-shirt because they knew in June the real field temperature would be about 90, anywhere from 90 to 100 degrees. So, to me, that was fun to experience that on both sides, the East Coast and West Coast, So, that was fun. I mean, Tim, did you remember that? And Rick, you guys remember that, right? How it was in those days?
You were talking about all the celebrities showing up, and I was wondering if how the players felt, because they came to Boston, and even the Boston fans focused on the Laker team. There wasn't anybody in the stands that they were looking to see.
Right.
They were looking to see the two teams that were on the floor, the guys on the bench. But the guys in the Lakers must have thought that they had to compete. Well, I was wanting all these kooks in the stands, but all the celebrities sitting down in the front row, like Jack Nicholson, you have to be seen,
Right,
Knowing that the fans in the stands are spending most of their time looking for who's at the game, not who's in the game.
That's right.
And that's almost
that's right.
Secondary to the showtime, And
right.
They're very lucky to have the type of team that they did, that they could buy that amount of talent and put it out there. Because these guys had to think, well, who are they here for anyway? And to go out there, you were basically playing for yourself. You come to Boston, and you had to believe that the Celts were playing for the fans in the stands.
And how about this, too? You guys may remember this. The other thing that used to really annoy Pat Riley, the Lakers coach no end, was that Dan Shaughnessy used to put in what hotel the Lakers were staying in Boston. And all of a sudden, the alarms would be pulled at 3 a.m., right? At four, that happened several times. And no amount of complaining was going to get Pat Riley anywhere because it was happening continually when they came to Boston during the playoffs. Shaughnessy would post what hotel they were in, and then some enterprising fan or maybe the bellman in the lobby or, you know, somebody bringing up a food service would pull the alarm, and Lakers would have to be out in the lobby at 2:30 a.m. while the fire chief came in and checked to make sure there was no fires there, no damage. So that used to, I know personally, that used to annoy and really get under his skin, Pat Riley. And, you know, I still remember to this day, after the 1984 series, was epic series which Celtics won, Pat Riley wrote, he wrote a letter to every member of the media. I mean, it was, obviously it was typewritten, but it was Pat Riley's signature, thanking the media for covering such an epic and great series. And that was in 1984, and I still have that letter from Pat Riley.
Wow.
Sitting
wow.
on my bulletin board.
Cool.
As an upshot to that, Rick and Tim, I was at a Bruce Springsteen, Pat Riley's Bruce Springsteen fan, as I have been over the years. And in Newark, New Jersey, in 2012, I was standing right next to Pat Riley in the pit close to the stage at a Bruce Springsteen show. And I approached him and I started talking to him. I told him I was a sports writer in Salem, Mass. I said, you wrote a letter to all of us after that series. And he was chuckling about it, just that someone would remember that like 38 years later.
Wow, that's cool.
And he's a big Springsteen fan. I've seen him at many shows and all that. But yeah, even though they lost that 84 series, he enjoyed the competitiveness of that series because there were so many future Hall of Famers on those teams. Magic and Worthy and Bird and McHale and Parrish, you know. And I think he lived for that competition because he was a really competitive guy. Kareem, I didn't mention him, right? Slightly good Hall of Famer.
I've heard of him.
But I don't think Pat Riley would have put the people who pull the alarms at the hotel in the Hall of Fame because it did affect their sleep habits.
All right.
They're in Shaughnessy Hall of Fame.
Let's get to the Power Five, Mike.
Okay. Well, you know, there's been some changes, right?
Yep.
There's been some changes. Right? So now, you know, this is... Unfortunately, my Memphis Grizzlies have fallen off. They've lost 8 of the last 10, so they've fallen a little bit out of the picture here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go. But the Cleveland Cavaliers are still hanging around. They're in the number. I want to put the Miami Heat up there, but there's still been a little too much inconsistency. But Cleveland, Donovan Mitchell is back at the point guard. He's been injured. I have him at the number 5 spot.
Okay.
And then I have the. I have the Philadelphia 76ers at the number 4 spot.
Okay.
They've been hot, and they've been good, but they lost to the Knicks last night. It's only one game, but they're just still a little holding back on them a little bit, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got to put the Denver Nuggets have been really, really consistent, and they're kind of percentage points. They're not far behind the Celtics, but I've got them at the number 3 spot, okay, the Denver Nuggets. Outstanding team. I mean, they're a real threat. They could win it all in the end. They could beat anybody in the Western Conference, and they're a threat to anybody that comes out of the Eastern Conference. So number 3. Number 2 is the Boston Celtics.
Okay.
Number 2 is the Boston Celtics.
Yep.
Because they've been in and out, and that's not just the last 10 games, but the last, well, certainly with Marcus Smart out, and just the past month, they've been a streaky team. And the Milwaukee Bucks have to, you know, launch themselves to the top spot here. They have won 7 straight. They've won 9 of the last 10. I saw Giannis get 2 50-point games in a matter of 1 week. Chris Middleton, their all-star player, is back from his injury. And right now, they have the luxury of bringing him off the bench and playing 23, 24 minutes a game because Pat Connaughton has been such a consistent starter for them. Connaughton has started the last 18, 19, 20 games. And obviously that's going to change when Middleton is fully healthy and the playoffs start. But Middleton is giving him 15, 20, 22 points off the bench. So it's a beautiful situation they have going in Milwaukee right now. And there are nights that I've seen Giannis play. He just looks unstoppable. And I'm trying to figure out how the Celtics are going to put up an imposing defense against him because, okay, he has the benefit of the officials not calling traveling on him, right, guys? They don't call traveling on him, and he's such a physical force underneath and he always ends up with somewhere between 12 and 20 rebounds. So I just think they have the goods to go the distance. And, you know, obviously it's going to be a real battle if and when they go against the Celtics in a seven-gamer. And obviously you want the Celtics to have that home court advantage if it comes down to a game seven. So it's going to be really important for the Celtics to not be lackadaisical and take days off down the stretch here, because there's really, what, 27, 28 games left. And if you're a Celtics fan, you definitely want to see your team in with that home court advantage if they're playing the Milwaukee Bucks.
You know, Mike, if when it does come to a Celtics Bucks Eastern Conference showdown and it goes seven games, they're going to beat the bejesus out of each other over the course of those seven games. And they may not be able to recover effectively to go against the Western Conference team in the finals.
Right. We've seen that happen before. Yeah. And I think, yeah, it's going to be a really physical series. I'm hoping Jason Tatum, you know, he looked sluggish the other night. He's shooting 3-for-15. I know I pointed out he's played the most minutes of anybody in the NBA, except for Siakam of Toronto. And I'm hoping that he feels fresh for the playoffs. And Jaylen Brown, you know, as long as he doesn't get traded at the last second here for Grant, is going to be the other most important factor. And the third guy has to be Marcus Smart. He has to come back strong and to be able to play down the stretch run. You know, Robert Williams, we've mentioned him before, in and out of the lineup. He has to be healthy if they play the Milwaukee Bucks. And I'll tell you what, too, don't sleep on the Miami Heat. They're good. They're like in fifth or sixth place right now, but they're good. And they could put something together down the stretch, and they have a really strong threesome with Jimmy Butler and Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo at the center spot. So you can't sleep on them either.
All right, Mike, so you got your assignment notebook out?
Yes, I do.
Okay. We need a report next week on the local angle, either former Celtics and or, you know, guys in the area like Brunson and Thibodeau, and you mentioned Connaughton. Just give us some thoughts on what stands out in your mind with these guys next week, if you would.
Sure. Absolutely. And, Tim, at the last minute, I should mention the second venue I was going to mention was the L.A. Dodger Stadium, or Chavez Ravine, because when John Tudor pitched there in 1985, Bill Kapoor's sports center sent me out there at the last minute. I had been there before. It's a beautiful place to watch a baseball game, and to watch a guy from Peabody on the mound in the playoffs was just a magnificent, magnificent experience, and to have him pitch in, you know, a treasured place like Dodger Stadium, where, you know, Don Drysdale had pitched and where Sandy Koufax had pitched the World Series, it was quite a treat to see John Tudor of Peabody, Mass, playing for the St. Louis Cardinals and pitching in Dodger Stadium.
You know, it's amazing, Mike. We're talking 48 years. No, we're not talking about this.
85, yeah.
You know, they're nearly 40 years.
Correct, yeah.
Well, I can beat that. 54 years ago, I went to Yankee Stadium and saw Mickey Mantle's last year, not his last at bat, but his last year, and I sat in the left field stands at the old Yankee Stadium, which was like a shrine. It was like going to Washington, D.C. or something or other as a Red Sox fan.
Yep.
And I sat in left field and the second deck up there, and Bob Allison of the Twins hit a home run right next to us. So.
Oh, my goodness. See that, Rick, that's, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's a fantastic venue story, a fantastic overall anecdote story with Allison hitting the home run.
Oh, yeah.
Just great. The old Yankee Stadium, of course, yeah, so much history there.
Oh, my God. It was like a spiritual.
When I first moved to Maryland to teach, I went up to Memorial Stadium up at the top of 33rd Street, and I sat on the first base side in the upper deck, and I had a Bob Uecker seat.
Yeah, sure.
I must be in the front row.
Right?
All by myself in my section, and I'm up there with my all spread out, like going, yep.
Well, do you guys, we're going long here, and we got to wrap it up. But do you guys remember when I was a senior in high school, back in 77, you could go, this was in the 60s, I could go on a Friday night to Fenway Park, and I'd get there at 6:45 if the game started at 7. I'd plunk down $2 and I could sit anywhere in the damn ballpark.
And wasn't it 50 cents for the bleachers, Rick?
It was 50 cents. They were so bad, but Fenway's such a great place to go to a game.
Right, right. I remember those days as well, yeah.
Okay, you got your assignment. Mike, I want you to be well this week. Have fun, and don't tell me what the score is, because I'm DVRing it right now.
Me too. No score, and I'm hoping Durant isn't playing for the Celtics tonight.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Take care.
Hey, bye-bye now.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, Michael.
Yeah. That's our basketball insider, Mike Grenier. Coach, any final thoughts here?
No, I could just echo what Mike was saying. Just, you know, hoping hell the Celts keep their wits about them and don't trade for anybody called Durant.
Well,
you know, the team you got, this team can explode. And, you know, does it have some, it has some, flaws, but, you know, they can whip the best, they can lose to the worst. So let's just ride it out and see where it goes.
Well, you know, it's funny. I always say that about the NFL. And I forget who it was. One of the coaches a long time ago said, you know, the other team has guys on scholarship too. So, you know, these guys are absolute elite athletes. And so, yeah, you're right. We have to keep that in mind, that any team can beat anybody. And the other thing, Tim, is who would you rather have calling the shots, Brad Stevens or two radio announcers?
Exactly. Considering these two radio announcers.
Right, exactly.
I would have to take Brad Stevens' kid.
Okay. All right. That's cool. All right, Tim, you be well this week, and we'll see you next Monday. It was fun tonight. Thank you.
You as well, my friend.
Take care, Coach. All right, that is Tim Kearns, who is our ambassador of goodwill and our super sports analyst, and a really good guy. So on behalf of, don't forget, the Salem News sports writers will be coming up tomorrow at 8 o'clock here on MSO News Sports. This week, the sports writers put a spotlight on high school track. And Matt Williams shares an update on Peabody's Heather McLean's mile performance at the New Balance Grand Prix. Plus a lot more with Phil Stacey, the executive sports editor, Matt Williams, the assistant sports editor, Nick Giannino, sports reporter at Salem News, Nick Kukru, the Gloucester Times sports editor, and of course, our own Bill Newell. That's all tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. And on Thursday in the morning, don't forget, we've got the Sports Desks program coming up with Nick and Nick, Dominic Nicastro, Nick Kukuru. We have the North Shore Sports Desk and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk. So that's all here on MSONewsSports.com. This has been North Shore Sports Night. On behalf of Tim Kearns, Bill Newell. Who am I missing? Bill Proposky. Oh, my goodness. and Mike Grenier. He's part of the team now, too. I'm Rick Moore. Thank you very much. Be well. Do the right thing. Bye-bye.